Every day at this time, we talk Stanley Cup playoffs with you. Yeah, we're going to keep you in the loop, even if you don't want to, even though if you're still mad or sad or disappointed from the Predator season being over, we're going to keep you in the loop on what's going on. Hopefully, you're still checking things out. Dan Rosen, NHL.com. We have to start right out of the gates by telling him, you were right. I gave you grief with your prediction. You were right. You did predict the Stars to win.
I did, and I also have the Blues going to the Stanley Cup Final, so I we'll see, you know. But I also had Tampa Bay winning the Stanley Cup. So
well, so did
everybody. I wasn't 100% right. Let's put it that way.
I don't think anybody gets fault or blame for picking Tampa to win it all. That's
but
interesting.
I'll take the credit for the, you know, the Dallas win, right? I mean, that's. No, I won't. No.
What? Look, you what credit where credit is due, and you did there pick you it. Go. We talked about it with you, and you told
I
us why.
I liked the way Dallas was playing. I thought that their defense and goaltending would frustrate Nashville, and I think it did. And the power play was a problem for the Predators. It was a big problem all year, and it's something they really do have to fix in the offseason. They have to. That's a big problem for them this season, and I think it ended up costing them big time in the playoffs.
What did you make of the whole? I mean, we spent a lot of time on the show yesterday talking about what was the night before, and certainly the league got tons of attention. Probably not the attention they were looking for, but just what was your takeaway from how that game ended in St. Louis, Game 3?
I mean, it's an unfortunate ending the way it ends. It's not the first time we've seen it happen in professional sports that a game ends on a call that, you know, we look on video review or on replay and say, man, I mean, had they missed that, but they missed it. You know, in live time, I mean, obviously that's a hand pass. And Colin Campbell, the senior VP of hockey ops in the NHL, was on, I believe, the NHL Network yesterday and Sportsnet up in Canada, Sportsnet Radio, Hockey Central, talking about it. And he basically said that, you know, like it was a hand pass, but it didn't get called and it was missed. We have the ability to look back at it and see it in slow motion and see exactly what happened. It's a non-reviewable play in the book. The refs don't have that. Right. They don't have what we have. And it's an unfortunate way of ending the game. I will say this. I don't want to say I chuckled, but, you know, I did. Like, Jordan Binnington, obviously upset, right? I mean, and who wouldn't be? Obviously upset. Braden Schenn, obviously upset. But big picture, that's not how you want to lose. And, yeah, maybe it, you know, it potentially cost them a win. We don't know how the rest of overtime would have gone, but you give up a goal with 61 seconds left in regulation to tie the game. Binnington doesn't make the save on Carlson even after the hand pass. I mean, he gave up 5 in the game. There were other opportunities for the Blues to win that game, so it didn't have to come down to that. But it did come down to that, and it's unfortunate, and I do think it's going to bring up more topics and more questions. It already has. But certainly among the general managers and the board of governors about, do you expand video review? I don't know what the answer is on that because they opened this box up when they went to the coaches' challenges for offside and goalie interference. And now where does it end? I guess that's the question. And it's going to be a very interesting debate that is had in the National Hockey League circles for quite some time, I think.
It's funny that you brought that up because I said that very thing on the show. It stinks it ended that way. Obviously, it looks like they got it wrong, but maybe don't give up a goal with a minute to go.
Yeah, and
same thing with the San Jose Vegas thing. It's a bad call, but don't give up 4 power play goals in 4 minutes.
Don't give up. You know, they didn't give them a goal, you know, in the San Jose Vegas. They gave them a 5-minute power play, and in hindsight, sure, that shouldn't have been a 5-minute power play. Maybe it shouldn't have even been a 2-minute power play. Don't give up 4 goals. Kill it off a little bit, right?
Yeah.
You know, bad break, bad luck. You can't let it confess. This one, they, you know, a hand pass directly led to a goal. That's the hard part. You know, in the Columbus-Boston series, the puck went off the netting and nobody saw it. And then it goes over to Bjorkstrand, Oliver Bjorkstrand, who moves it to Panarin, and Panarin scores. that's non-reviewable. If Bjorkstrand had shot it into the net, it is reviewable according to the rules. Might seem silly, but that's the way the rule is written right now. You know, in the end, though, it was just one goal, and it was the middle of the game. And Bruce Cassidy brought this up yesterday, the Bruins coach. He said the difference is that we had time to recover, whereas obviously St. Louis did not. So very unfortunate way of ending a game. But let's see if they can rebound and make it so it's not that big of a deal in the end.
We'll know tonight. Dan Rosen, NHL.com on the line with us. John Davidson resigning as the president of the Blue Jackets, of their hockey operations. Looks like he's headed to the Big Apple to take over that role with the Rangers. So everybody, you know, Columbus, it paid off. You know, I scratched my head going, what in the world are you doing? They got into the playoffs, and they did something they never done in franchise history. They actually won a series, and, oh, by the way, it happened to be courtesy of Tampa, sweeping the best team in hockey in the regular season, but they would falter in round two. But now, Dan, as you know, they've got huge decisions to make, and they're trying to find out who's coming, who's staying, who's going. How can they convince some of these guys to stay? How do you think this is going to play out in Columbus?
Well, first off, you're 100% right in terms of it worked out. I mean, they won a round. They got past it. They did something. They ignited their fan base. You know, that is a huge thing. Hockey grew in the last month and a half in Columbus because of that. And you guys in Nashville, I'm sure, understand that. You know, what was it like when the Predators finally first won that first, you know, the first series, got into the second round? Remember that? I mean, it was ignited. That ignited the fan base in Nashville, and it was big. There's massive changes coming now, and John Davidson is the first domino to fall. I don't believe Panarin's coming back. I don't believe Bobrovsky's coming back. Although, if I had to pick one, I would say Bobrovsky over Panarin because, you know, the goaltending situations with teams is a little different than needing a scoring winger. I mean, a lot of teams do have goalies, but I think they're going to be a package deal to the Florida Panthers. I've written that in my mailbag that runs every Wednesday a couple of times. I think they're both going to Florida. We'll see. It's just a hunch. But Duchesne is another one. Is he going to come back? Is he not going to come back? I think it's 50-50 at this point, maybe even less. So there are changes coming. But the good news for the Blue Jackets is John Davidson spent a number of years there, 7 years there, and built that franchise to what it is now. You know, it's very well known now in the community. There is a base there for them to build off of that was not there before him. They went to the second round of the playoffs. Their fans are ignited. There is a base there for them to build off that previously wasn't there. And they've got good young players. Werenski, Jones, are just terrific. Pierre-Luc Dubois, Cam Atkinson, Nick Foligno is not a young player, neither is Atkinson, but they're right in the prime of their careers. They've got good talent. They've got more coming. I think they're going to be okay, but there's going to be major changes coming there, and there's no question about it.
Dan Rosen is with us, NHL.com. Dan, just coming back to your thoughts at the beginning of the interview, there's no question that you could argue that the downfall, if you boil it down to one thing for the Predators, was the lack of production for the power play, certainly in the series, but really it was a problem the entire year. So how do you fix a power play? Like, how do you go about it? Because that's what everybody's kicking around here is what exactly to do about it, because they're going to have a lot of the same players back, and there's no reason that those players couldn't bounce back and do well, but they definitely, it became a mental thing, I thought, as much as a physical thing.
I think you're right on the mental part of it. I think, and what's interesting is I just finished covering a series, the Carolina-Boston series, where Carolina couldn't score on the power play.
Yeah, it got into their head.
Time they were on the power play, and it got into their head. And Rod Brind'Amour, Carolina's coach, was talking about that. He said, you know, even last night, after they get a power play early in the game, he said, and it took the energy right out from us because it's in their head now. They're thinking about it. They're overthinking, overpassing, looking for something great instead of just trying to put the puck at the net and work from there, right? Work off the shot. I don't know if that's necessarily what the problem was for the Predators. There was a lot of different issues, but I think it does become a mental grind on the power play. When you get one, you worry rather than when you get one, you get energized. If you score, you know, if you're 20% on a power play, 22%, even 19%, 18%. When you're in that neighborhood, that 18% to 22% on the power play, you're thinking to yourself, okay, this can energize us. When you're struggling the way the Nashville Predators struggled all year, you're worried that it's going to take energy away from you. And I think that that's what happens. And then you just don't play it right. So that's the mental part about it. The physical part about it, they have to look at new ways to try to score. I mean, they have to look through their power plays this year and really, you know, that's an off-season challenge for this team, for the coaching staff, to look through their power plays this year and go over, why couldn't we score? What was wrong? What are we missing? Maybe look at some of the good power plays in the league and say, okay, what do they have that we don't have right now? Do we have to move guys around? Do we have to put guys in different positions? You know, do our entries need to be better? Do our, you know, do we need to play a little bit further down low? This is a whole analysis that they have to do all offseason, because you know that's the difference. It already was for them. It was the difference, and to me, in that series. What were they, 0 for 15?
Yeah.
Power play against Dallas? Well, you're not going to win a series when you don't score a power play goal.
Dan, it's interesting how a team can sort of change its narrative, especially in the postseason. The Bruins, and you correct me if this is off base, but there was a time in the regular season where they were considered a little top heavy, right? Relying a little too
much on their top line.
And do they have the balance? And it's anything but that right now. They're getting great contributions from people down in the order. So how did they do it? Because right now it looks like they're clicking and they're going to be very, very tough to beat in the final.
Well, how they did it was they did the right thing, experimented with David Pastrnak playing with David Krejci, and then went back to Pastrnak with Brad Marchand and Patrice Bergeron, because those three guys are such dynamic players together. They belong together. They need to be together, and you have to figure it out outside of them. So that's what they did. They did that, and that was key. And they've even gone back to Pastrnak with Krejci in the playoffs to get Pastrnak going, to change things up for him. But in the end, they always come back to that top line with Marchand, Pastrnak, and Bergeron. So that's the good thing. They added Charlie Coyle. There's your third-line center. They didn't have that before. They did not have a number three center. They tried out a number of different guys in this season, and they couldn't find a fit there. Charlie Coyle became a fit there. They added Marcus Johansson. Well, there's your third-line left wing, right? Put him with Danton Heinen, who was playing on the top line with Bergeron and Marchand at times when Pastrnak was not there. Now you've got a viable third line. You've got to figure out what you do on the right side of your second line, right? Okay, can David Backes handle this? Play him in limited minutes, but give him the energy. Play him in the right situations, and bang, you've got Krejci, DeBrusk, and David Backes as a really good second line. So now you got three lines, right? Three scoring lines. But let's not forget about what you have on your fourth line, because I think Sean Corrali is one of the more underrated players in the National Hockey League, the kind of guy that you really only appreciate if you watch him night in and night out. He is a fourth-line center, but he could be a third- or second-line center, and he drives the bus for a fourth line that was dominant. It has been dominant in the playoffs. So that's how you get your depth. You fill it out with Coyle. You fill it out with Johansson. You make it work with Backes. You keep the top line together. And all of a sudden, you've got four lines that are coming at you in waves. And Toronto handled it a bit, but still struggled in the end. Columbus handled it a bit, but still struggled in the end. And Carolina had no chance.
Dan, we always enjoy our visits. Thanks for doing this. We'll talk to you down the road.
All right. You got it, guys.
Dan Rosen, NHL.com. We'll come back, talk a little bit more about what you just heard on the other side. 102.5 The Game. Always enjoy our conversations with Dan Rosen. That was good stuff from NHL.com. So, you heard some of the things that we talked about with him. In particular, you wanted to hit on something that I thought was a good discussion piece. So, I'm going to kind of let you take it from here.
Because I think we all are looking back on the Predator season. The power play, which we talked a lot about with Dan, is a big, big element about it. The other thing that I thought was interesting is, you know, all of the moves that the Predators made, and I don't hear a lot of people belly aching about this, which I think is good, because you're never guaranteed anything when you make trades, but all of the trades that they made for Brian Boyle, for Wayne Simmonds, for you know, Mikhail Granlund, they all made sense. And they didn't explode. They didn't blossom. And there will be those that say that through the years, that happens a lot, right? It doesn't always make you
better
when you add at the trade deadline. There is sometimes
it's a gamble.
There are cases where standing pat is the right way to go. But for Boston, they made some moves and they worked. It has kicked in, and it's so hard to figure out why it works for some and why it doesn't quite work for others. But there's just no guarantees. Not an exact science. But the Bruins at one time, even though they were a very good team, they were tremendous at goal prevention, but they weren't getting much at all 5-on-5. Now, they had their power play was keeping them afloat offensively, but they were really having trouble scoring. And the rap was, well, you get past that first line of Pastrnak, Marchand, and Bergeron, and who have they got? Nobody was really scaring you. But it's amazing how Charlie Coyle, who they gave up a pretty good prospect for, and Ryan Donato, and Marcus Johansson, or they're saying Johansson. He's Swedish. It used to be Johansson, but you know who I'm talking about. He's made some big plays. Big, big goals for them. It just seems like those guys and their addition has brought out the best in some of the other guys that were already there, like Backes and Corrali and some of these guys. It just hit. Who could have predicted that? I don't know. They were already a very good team that was going to have a chance to win. They've been in sort of the shadow of Tampa all year long. But everybody's looking at Boston going, that's a really good team. But all of a sudden, they got what they needed by a couple of key moves. So the trades they made at the deadline have hit. It does work sometimes. But it's so mystifying. You have to feel like hockey operations in all of the different buildings look at that and say, boy, now that's how you add at the trade deadline. But why does that work? Because everything on paper looked the same for the Predators to me in terms of when they brought those guys in. Perfect addition. Veteran guys who have won. Add a little size, that net front pez. It looks great.
We know that.
And it just
didn't
happen.
Remember the day after, okay? We did it 4 hours, wall to wall, and everybody was over the top thrilled. And oh, by the way, the Simmons thing came in right as we got off the air, and people were going nuts. So, look.
All season long, people were talking about him.
Right. That's the way it works. For whatever reason right now, Vegas has the magic touch. Their moves have worked. Their moves have been good. I would say right now the Sharks have been good at the deadline, right? Evander Kane was a tremendous addition
year.
For them. Well,
yeah.
I know, but I'm doing the last 2 years, and this year Nyquist
has
been good.
Yeah, he's
helped. Been good. So the Sharks have done a good job at the deadline. You just pointed out what Boston has done. Vegas has done a really good job. It worked for Columbus. It worked. Whatever you make of it, it worked. Right? It did. I know they only got to the second round, but it worked. Other moves, Kevin Hayes. It didn't work in Winnipeg. Stastny worked the year before. Kevin Hayes did not.
Yeah, and not that he played bad, but it didn't cure what the issues were for the team.
Stastny, though, pushed them past the Predator. It pushed them into the Western Conference
final. Oh, yeah. I think they would say, boy, no problem giving up our first-round pick for that move. This year, it's like, oh, boy, second year in a row we gave up our first-round pick, and here we are. We got all these decisions to make. That stings a little bit. A team that really didn't do anything. Name me the moves that the St. Louis Blues made at the deadline.
Nothing.
Basically nothing. Right?
Yes, nothing.
I don't think they did anything. And here they are. So it's a great question of the value of making moves long-term and short-term at the deadline.
I think, honestly.
But you still, like, your fan base, your team, the whole feeling is you like when you get a reinforcement, right? When there's a need, especially.
Wouldn't you say, though, and I don't have the numbers to back this up, but I feel like more times than not, the going for it, really, those players overall, if you did all the go for it players, it didn't really help.
Well,
sometimes
only,
it does,
because
but
only
most
team,
of the time,
only one team
it
wins,
doesn't.
Right? So there's always going to be four or five teams that.
But I'm
make
giving
moves
San Jose, even if they
round.
Lose here, if you get to the Western Conference Final,
run.
It worked.
They had a good run.
Stastny, I gave him credit. It worked. You got to the conference final. I'm not saying win it all, but you know whether if it worked or not. I'm saying more times than not, does it really work?
I think a lot of people would say probably a little less than 50-50. Maybe.
I would say it's less.
Well, just because you have to win at least a round to even start to justify it. Like Matt Zuccarello. Is Dallas okay with that? They won one round.
Yes, it worked.
But they gave up two picks.
But he I think they would say he was critical.
Well, yeah, he played great. But the net result is you win one round.
Right.
You didn't win the cup. You didn't come close to winning the cup. You came within one game of getting to the conference final. But I think
they fell in love with him. I think they're going to keep him.
So that's the thing. I think they're probably saying, well worth the
yes.
move. Well worth the move, even though they don't win the cup.
Steve, what's up?
Hey, I'm just listening, and I was wondering if these acquisitions we've had with Simmons and Boyle, and especially Turris, do you think it's a possibility that these players, you know, come to Nashville and it's like all of a sudden they're thinking, "Gosh, I really don't really want to be on this team." There's got to be a reason why they didn't pan out. I just we'll hang up and listen. What you say?
All right, thank you, Steve. Look, there's a reason, but I don't believe for a minute that is a factor whatsoever. It's usually just the opposite. Most of the time, they are thrilled to be here. I think, by the way, just listen to them, especially Brian Boyle. Absolutely. I mean, I think it grew on him quickly. Simmons, they have gone, players in general have just absolutely glowed about the market,
sure.
The fan base, the everything. So I don't think that's it at all. I cannot think of an example of a guy who came in and you're like, didn't seem like he was interested.
Yeah, Kyle Turris was so excited about Nashville. The trade happened because he was willing to sign the extension
deal
before he ever played a game here.
Yeah.
So that's what he thought of Nashville. Now, you know, that's in a new chapter now as they move forward. But so what he's saying is not
look,
the
you're,
issue
you're
at
all. Asking a fair question, Steve, of
but
why hasn't it?
Chemistry is such a hard thing to figure.
I don't believe that's the reason. Is there a reason? Sure. There's something. I just don't think that's it. It's not because they didn't want to be here.
But it's also, I think, in the grand scheme of things, it's a relatively small sample size of games. From the time, I don't know how many exact games there were from the trade deadline till the end of the first round. So six playoff games plus, what would it be, 15 games in the regular season?
Mm-hmm.
So you can have a patch of 21 games where he just didn't.
Look, there were guys.
It's not like they didn't win any games. Like, the team won plenty of games down the stretch. It just wasn't those guys. Boyle had his moments, right? Boyle had big moments.
Boyle worked out. That
Simmons,
trade worked out.
Simmons had one goal. Granlund had one goal. And in the playoffs, Granlund had a goal. Simmons did not score. Yeah. He got hurt. Of course, he got hurt the second game. So,
yeah.
I mean, that was unlucky. So we'll never know. Had Simmons played in the rest of the series, could he have made a big play? Could have.
Was there a time when players were maybe either coming here kicking and screaming or reluctant?
Sure.
Or just saying no? Yes.
No, people remember Jason Spezza.
Well, that's
right?
Where I was going. I was like, the Dallas Stars, the Predators saw them in the first round. There was a guy on their roster that said no.
And aren't we
there
glad
have been
that
others.
Didn't happen? I'm kind of glad that didn't happen.
Yeah. There have been others that have said no. But that was a while back. Those days are gone. Those days are long gone. The reputation is too good. They've all come through here. They see the atmosphere. And those days are gone. But did that exist? You bet it did. Austin, what's up?
Hi. I was just curious if you guys thought that it was maybe coaching instead of the players. Maybe like the loss of Phil Housley, for example, would have affected the power play more so than the addition of new players.
Are you talking about the power play or the trades not working out? Which category are you in?
The trade's not working out. I would say, would you think that it is more of a factor of coaching rather than the players is my question.
Okay. All right. Thank you for the phone call. Well, I mean, coaching has to be factored in. I don't know how you leave coaching out of this equation.
It's factored in, and they took – I mean, you listen to Peter Laviolette. He took a lot of the responsibility for it. But I think sometimes with – Phil Housley specifically gets brought up some. But remember, Phil Housley wasn't there last year, and they won the President's Trophy. You know, and they lost to the team with the second highest point total in the league in game 7 of the second round. So it's not like that season was a complete, hey, what's going on? Like, the Phil Housley thing was hardly brought up until this year. Now, Phil Housley was a guy that made
I think his presence
impact.
Was felt. I
great
do.
Impact while he was here.
I do. I think sometimes
but I'm just saying,
it's
sometimes
overblown
people get
a little bit. I agree. I feel like we use Phil Housley.
We didn't hear that last year. We only heard it this year.
Well, I will say this because I've brought this up on the show. There is something that does concern me since he left. I do think it's blown up. It's almost used as a crutch. It's used too much, I think. But look, his presence was felt.
He made
okay?
a great impact.
He made an
here,
impact.
And nobody would disagree with that internally. All of the coaches would all raise their hands and say, yeah,
something
Phil
that concerns
did a great
me
job.
Since he's been gone, you're right. They hung banners 2 years ago when he wasn't on that staff. But they were also the most penalized team in the league the entire year. The entire year. They never got out from
right,
underneath
what,
that. They never fixed it.
But you're not – that's
the
not
penalty
him,
kill. The penalty kill bailed them out. It could have affected them. It could have. It could have factored in to their season not playing out. This year, same thing. Power play, bad, all season long, and it played out all the way through. I think what concerns me is there's been two striking categories like that that were an issue, that were discussed, was on everybody's radar, everybody knew, everybody, in that they never could figure out how to get it, fix it. 2 years in a row, two things that plagued them the entire year all the way to the end. And it does concern me, like, how did they not figure out a way to fix that? So that would be something that would concern me. But I do think that sometimes Phil Housley's brought up too much, but let's also say this. His impact was felt, and as we've discussed before, they probably do need to get another voice, someone that has kind of the resume like Phil Housley, somebody that had been there, done it for a long time, a well-respected player. That would be probably a nice voice to put in the room to help them with some things. But I also, let's not go too far with the Phil Housley stuff. Well, why don't you tell everybody about boats?
Well, let me tell you about the Nashville Boat Club, very specifically. Hey, when you walked outside your door this morning, you probably felt like, hey, it's a little warmer today. Let's get out by the water. If you had that thought, think about the Nashville Boat Club and think about a membership there. If you love being out on the water, when the weather gets warm, and if you start thinking, I love being out, let's go to the lake, then you need to check out the Nashville Boat Club. 13 seasons now, they have a system that works. All you do, once you're a member, is you make your reservation to come out. You show up at the time that's appointed. The boat is ready for you. It's got all of the accessories you're looking for. It's gassed up, ready to go. They've got their crew to help you get out on the water. And then, boom, you go have a blast. Come back, gas it back up, and you're out of there. No hassles. It's a fantastic operation. Find out more about it by going to 232-9100. Hey, Memorial Day weekend's coming up. You know a lot of people love going out in the lake at those times. And we're just getting started for the summer. So inquire right now. 232-9100. Ask about the four different lakes they operate out of. Ask about all of the other things that they have, including the 60 boats or more in their fleet, all of which you have access to when you're a member. Go to NashvilleBoatClub.net for all the details. Schedule that tour. And most of all, don't buy a boat. Join the club.
Hey, don't forget to stop by Bridgestone Arena tomorrow. Celebrate. You are the best fans in the sport. You know it. Noon to 4, enjoy free lunch, team store sale, face painting, locker room tours, so much more. 12 to 4 tomorrow afternoon. Celebration for being the best fans in professional sports. It's always fun when they do this. So hope to see a lot of you out there. I think I saw even the – let me look this up before I say this, Willie. I think I saw the Predators tweet out just here shortly that Joey's going to be there. Yeah, Ryan Johansson. Okay, just want to make sure he'll be there for the Smashville celebration tomorrow.
Big celebration. I hope people can come out. I'll be over there. Not that I get the same level of billing as Ryan Johansson, but I will be there.
Pretty darn close. I wish I could be there. I've been there for this before, but we kind of have a big game in Smyrna tomorrow.
Yeah.
Clash of the Titans. Two undefeateds.
All right.
12-0 and 12-0. You got a quick leaderboard for the PGA?
I do. And also just a quick shout-out to the Commodores. Women's tennis team plays in the national quarterfinals today against number one Georgia. We talked to Jeff McDonald, had a great conversation with him earlier this week. And both golf teams are in the national tournaments as well coming up this weekend. As for the PGA Championship, how about Brooks Koepka? Started with the 63 yesterday. He's only birdied two of the first three holes, so he's now at 9 under for the tournament. And if you missed it earlier, Jordan Spieth with a 66 after a 69 yesterday. He's done for the day at 5 under. So Spieth very much in the mix after two rounds. Daniel Berger, Dustin Johnson also 4 under and done for the day. Tommy Fleetwood is also 4 under, 5 strokes back. He is through 6 holes today. So, very interesting start. Brooks Koepka picking up right where he left off.
Interesting. Does anybody have any interest in the Preakness now because of what happened with the Derby?
Less, but you know.
I mean, there is a horse called Bourbon War that I'm kind of rooting
for
a little
bit. That's Eddie Olczyk. Eddie Olczyk, that was his shout-out last night.
Really?
That's who he's calling for.
Well,
yeah.
I heard them say that, didn't they give even a trifecta or some numbers that Eddie O was saying go with?
Yeah.
Well, Improbable is the one in the lead at the 5-2 odds.
Yep.
And then it's War of Will, Another Twist of Fate, Always Mining, Owendale, and Bourbon War. Also, Warrior Charge is also on the list.
And then how do you not like a horse named Win?
Or Laughing Fox. Martin King, Market King.
So I was just curious if anybody was, how that's going to affect the Preakness on Saturday. But I guess we will find out. A really good conversation. If you missed it, you're going to want to hear this next to close out the show. A conversation with Ryan Leaf. He was just in our
best
town.
Best interview we've done all week.
You're going to want to hear this.
We've had some good ones.
That is next.
Millionaire and also become a drug addict and go to prison, right? I mean, both things can happen. It's life. Because at 19, 20, 21 years old, you hear my story and you go, that's an awesome story, but that will never happen to me. And I'm able to say, well, yeah, well, which part? You're not going to be the junkie felon, or you're not going to be the famous football-playing millionaire in the NFL? So it's a good story. It captures their attention. Coaches really like that. They like to see the engagement. And then I try to stay in contact with the team over the years after I leave, just so there's some consistency when things happen.
In order to do what you're doing, you had to get to a point where you were open about being willing to talk about the struggles that you've had. When did you get to that point? When did you get secure enough and comfortable enough that you said, you know what, I'm okay opening up and telling everybody this because I can help people?
Well, it's been an evolution, right? I mean, the negativity of what existed, shook me to my core. It just took me to the very bottom. I went to a prison cell because I wasn't able to deal with life on life's terms. So it's taken a long time, and it's still evolving, right? You know, it's emotionally exhausting to go tell the story, of course, but I understand the feedback I get, people who reach out and get help and the lives that are changed, that's validation enough. I'm not there to say, hey, everybody, look how great I am doing. You know, that's not what it's about. In fact, it can never be about me again. It has to be about the individual that is out there that needs help and needs maybe somebody who crashed all the way to the bottom to not go to the same place. So it's ever evolving. I was in my hometown for the first time speaking since my incarceration. It was difficult, but I've found the humility, which I believe is the understanding of who you are, regardless of what anybody else thinks. And I think that even though things have been going well the last few years, I think I really, really was able to take a good hard look at myself when I was back home, speaking to my home community and realizing that, you know what, I'm in that place where it doesn't matter what anybody else thinks of me, says about me, or anything. It's I understand who I am, and I'm okay with the guy I'm looking at in the mirror every morning.
Fantastic stuff. Now, your hometown, I believe, is Great Falls, Montana. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
So I can tell you, Ryan, I spent a summer, and who knows, maybe you were kicking around the town. It would be the summer of 93 in the Pioneer League as a member of the Medicine Hat Blue Jays. We were in the same division as the Great Falls Dodgers, so we spent many a I think we played 18 times over the summer or something. We were wearing out the path from Canada to Great Falls and all those towns in Montana. What a great experience that was for me. It is a different place, isn't it, right? It's just that whole countryside. It's just unbelievably scenic.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I'm really, really grateful to be from there. And you're right, I was. I was probably at a ton of your games. I would go there, Raul Mondesi and that Caros, Ramon Martinez, Pedro Martinez, all came through there in Great Falls when I was growing up. So, I mean, it was it was neat to be able to check out those guys. And so, yeah, it definitely was. I was going into my senior year of high school that summer.
Yeah, I probably got heckled by Ryan Leaf. I didn't even know it because I think I was hitting about 195 in a lot of those games.
Who's that bum at first? Hey, Ryan.
I don't think I've ever been a heckler, I'll tell you that. So.
Hey, really appreciate the visit. That's really cool that you're coming back for a couple more visits. If you ever want us to get the word out, we'll be more than happy to help. We'd love to talk to you again down the road.
Definitely, guys.
Go enjoy your time with your family. Have a good vacation. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, gentlemen. Have a great day.
Really good interview. Hope you enjoyed that as much as we did. That will do it for our show here today and this week. You have a fantastic weekend. Enjoy all the sports. We'll have tons to discuss on Monday morning at 10 a.m. We'll see you then.